Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and programs of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. We are continuing our membership drive, and we really appreciate those who have already contributed, and that includes Linda from Bethlehem, who called in toward the end of the All Things Considered segment. So thank you, Linda, so much. Listeners of Your Financial Choices, we have a great, great show tonight, but you are certainly welcome to call in with your pledge as well at 610-758-8810. Or questions, with questions, we're live tonight, or you can submit your contributions at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. Today is October 21st, 2020. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing up at 28,347, the NASDAQ down at 11,484, and the S&P down at 3435. Tonight, in our continuing series for Financial Planning Month, we will discuss taking the fear out of estate planning with a special emphasis on digital assets. And don't we think that applies to everybody? Yes, it does. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and she'll bring it into the studio. Questions may also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, removing the fear from moving forward with your estate planning with a special emphasis on digital assets with my guest, Attorney Eric Strauss from Wirth McGee and Fisher. Attorney Strauss focuses his practice on estate planning, probate and estate administration, revocable and irrevocable trust planning and administration, Pennsylvania inheritance tax, federal estate and gift tax, fiduciary income tax for trusts and estates, and orphans court litigation. He also handles related real estate and small business succession and transactional matters. He received his BA from Syracuse University in 1987 and his JD from the Western New England College School of Law in 1989. Eric is a member of the Lehigh and Carbon County Bar Associations, as well as the Pennsylvania Bar Association, and is past chair of the PBA Real Property Probate and Trust Law Section. Eric has authored numerous articles and a critically acclaimed speaker, I will attest to that, a critically acclaimed speaker for community and professional groups. Most recently, Eric was elected into the American College of Trust and Estate Council. To qualify for membership, a lawyer must have no less than 10 years' experience in the active practice of probate and trust law or estate planning. Lawyers and law professors are elected to fellows based on their outstanding reputation, exceptional skill, and substantial contributions to the field by lecturing, writing, teaching, and participating in bar activities. It is their aim to improve and reform probate, trust, and tax laws, procedures, and professional responsibilities. And folks, that is the condensed version of everything that Eric has accomplished. Welcome to the show, Eric. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Lori. Great to be back here with you. I was trying to think. I think it's been probably 4 or 5 years since I've been a guest on your show, and I always enjoy it, and thank you for that nice introduction.
Well, that's because you've been so busy, Eric. It wasn't because we haven't wanted you on the show, so we really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join us. It's wonderful to have you. So I just want to remind listeners, if you have questions, you can call in at 610-758-8810. This is Financial Planning Month, but it's also National Estate Planning Awareness Month. So I think those fit right together. Estate planning is part of financial planning. I would like to take the fear out of estate planning. It's my mission to get everybody to do their estate planning. So tonight, Eric, I thought we could cover what estate planning is, how to kickstart your estate plan if you've been too afraid to do something, how can we kickstart it, and then touch on a critical aspect of estate planning in today's environment, which of course is managing your digital world. So to start, Eric, can you give us an overview of what estate planning is? And remember, we want to try to take the fear out of it for people.
Well, and I'll hang on to your fear comment, because it's amazing how frequently I see clients that literally come into my office and they feel like they have to apologize to me. Well, you know, we've wanted to do this for years and years and years, and for whatever reason, it a lot of people just get stuck in the sand. You'd be amazed at how many new estate plans I do in the new year, because they sort of have some downtime over the holidays, they think about things, and then they make that New Year's resolution. This year we're going to do it. Same thing happens to me at the end of every summer when people are on vacation. They're thinking, well, we've got to get around to doing that. And in September, I always get very busy. This year in particular, with the COVID-19, that really became a major life-changing event for many people earlier this year, I was receiving calls from frantic people that needed to get their estate plan updated right away. The problem was, as of March 15th, the law firms were non-essential, and we were not allowed to have people in our offices to sign documents. We couldn't meet with people. We could meet virtually, but when it came to signing documents, that wasn't until mid-May when the governor released the restrictions that we could have, as we do now, people come in with, masks and plexiglass screens and all the rest. But, I think a lot of procrastinators learned a big lesson. Who would have imagined what we're all living with now? But I remember one conversation with a longtime client. And it was a gentleman who, about a year ago, we talked about making a very minor change to his will. It was a specific amount of cash that was to go to one grandchild. I think it was, $3,000 versus $5,000. And I did those changes for him back in September a year ago. And, through the last fall, we'd send him reminders, I'll get in. And come March 15th, when the shutdown happened, it was probably around April, he called me and said, I got to get in and change, make that change. I said, you can't come in, Bill. And, well, what do you mean? I've been a client. I said, you can't come in. I said, there are worse things that can happen than you dying without making that minor change to your will, like the dying part. So a lot of people have been, I think it was a wake-up call for many of us. And people procrastinate for a variety of reasons. I think a lot of people think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. When I do my will, I'm going to get hit by a truck the next day. Some people, there are personal circumstances that they just haven't internally resolved, whether it's a strained relationship, a beneficiary, or an intended beneficiary who has unique circumstances. So, yeah, then, a lot of people, say that putting an estate plan together makes a root canal seem like a good idea. It's not that, but honestly, most of my clients, they leave the process feeling very relieved and very positive about the process. So, what is the process? I think the first thing is taking stock of who our intended beneficiaries are, who our what we call fiduciaries will be. So who is going to manage the estate plan when we're not able to? Those are people like executors and agents under a power of attorney and trustees. First and foremost, probably, is what does a person own? How is it titled? And that sounds like a very simple question. And for many people, it is. But to engage in an estate plan, we need to know what assets we're dealing with. If I went to a doctor and said, doctor, I need brain surgery, the doctor would say, well, we need to do it. Oh, no x-rays. I need that surgery. Well, to do a good job, the doctor has to look under the hood. They have to know what they're dealing with. So typically you want to have a very careful inventory of accounts, how they're titled, which is very important. Many accounts have beneficiaries attached to them, things like life insurance, retirement accounts. You know, these things all have to work together. A lot of people are surprised when I tell them that, you know, your will doesn't control your IRA. So if I have a will that says everything goes to my spouse, but my IRA beneficiary designation says everything goes to my good friend Lori Siebert, that trumps the will. So,
well, we're going to continue to talk about that. Folks, we are at our first break. If you have questions, there's lots to talk about tonight. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. And you can call in with a pledge or an extra contribution to our membership drive right at this time. You can do that through the website at wdiy.org. We have great listeners of Your Financial Choices, those who are very appreciative of the programming and the education that we bring through this show. We've been at WDIY more than 10 years, and we hope that we've reached a lot of people and helped them with information like we're discussing tonight with attorney Eric Strauss on estate planning. So that's at wdiy.org. If you have questions, you can call in at 610-758-8810. We're discussing taking the fear out of estate planning with attorney Eric Strauss from Worth, McGee, and Fisher in Allentown, and kind of getting a feel for what I would say, Eric, kind of whatever roadblock someone feels from moving forward with doing estate planning, they shouldn't let it keep them from moving forward. You said sometimes people feel bad. They say they're sorry. Some people probably aren't sure about who they're going to pick for the personal representative or for their beneficiaries. But that's one of the things you can help them go through. I've seen it, I've heard it, and it's amazing the perspective an attorney can give when you're trying to navigate these decisions. You don't have to do it by yourself. There are professionals. So, Eric, you had said one of the important elements in first step, I would say, even in estate planning, is kind of taking an inventory or taking an assessment of the assets that someone has. But you also had mentioned at the tail end of our conversation before the last break is you really have to understand more than just the assets you have. It is around understanding beneficiary designations as well. So could you talk for a little bit about the importance of asset titling and beneficiary designations? And this is really even outside of us talking about the critical documents, which we'll do, you know, shortly as well. So let's just talk about what someone has today, maybe even before they've done estate planning.
Sure. I'd be happy to. I mean, so the title issue is critical, and it's something that's often overlooked. In fact, you know, people sometimes ask me about, you know, my competitors, you know, online will drafting programs, and you know, people will pull me aside and say, you know, are those things really valid? They're surprised when I say, you know, a lot of them are. A lot of them, you can generate a perfectly, you know, perfectly acceptable will here in Pennsylvania. The problem is that you don't get the conversation, and you don't have that looking under the hood, where in a very common situation. So with many married couples, assets are owned jointly, what's called tenancy by the entireties, which is a form of ownership that it's a joint tenancy with right of survivorship. So if my wife and I own our house as tenants by the entireties and I get hit by a truck, that the title to that asset, and it can be a house, it can be a bank account, title passes automatically to the surviving joint owner at the time of death. So it doesn't really matter what that the will of that person says. The ownership structure takes precedence over the will. So with many married couples, a first to die spouse, you know, upon their death, there is no necessity to administer an estate, which in essence, The will of the first to die often has no meaning because it doesn't control anything. When ownership of assets is vested in an individual person, that's where a will controls that asset, unless it has a beneficiary designated, which you can do, well, you have to do on a retirement account, you know, 401k, 403b, IRA, Roth IRA. You have to name a beneficiary in a life insurance contract or an annuity. Other assets, brokerage accounts, bank accounts, you can name a beneficiary. You don't have to. But in order to help a client plan their estate, I need to know how everything's titled because everything has to work together. Sometimes there's a combination of ownership that that makes sense for a particular client. In other words, some assets controlled by a will or trust, others controlled by beneficiary designations. Again, you want everything to work together. So once you kind of get a handle on assets, and we'll talk about how specifically we do that, but you know, the estate planning discussion involves two major areas. You know, what happens if I become incapacitated, which many people overlook. A lot of people come in and they say, I need a will. Well, a will transfers property at death. Have you thought about what happens if you have a stroke or if you develop Alzheimer's dementia? So not only do we plan for transfer of wealth either, you know, during your lifetime by gifting or at the time of your death, we look at incapacity. And you know, that's where we talk about things like powers of attorney. And we have powers of attorney both for health care and for financial management. And, you know, those are really, I describe them as very powerful permission slips. So if I sign a power of attorney, Lori, naming you as my agent, I don't give up my rights to control my assets. I'm just giving you permission to do that for me, which can be critical because it can prevent or alleviate the need for something like a guardianship proceeding.
Well, think about, Eric, if I could jump in for a second, think about, you mentioned at the top of the show about, you know, the COVID-19. I know of people, you know, you've heard the stories that are put in a coma for weeks or months. So if they don't have a power of attorney, who is managing their assets? So this does become really critical.
It is. And for many people, you know, a lot of people think if you don't have a will, everything goes to Pennsylvania. That's not true. If you don't have a will in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania law will write one for you. And for many people, it's actually an acceptable solution. I'm not recommending not doing a will, but you know, for many people, just by luck, it happens to, it's not as terrible as sometimes, in particular cases, it's not as terrible as people might think. Being incapacitated and not having a power of attorney, it is a horrible thing for families because it forces you into what's called the orphan's court and what's called a guardianship, an incapacity and guardianship proceeding, which, you know, you're putting on medical testimony describing, you know, how a failed, you know, how a loved one's cognitive abilities have failed and that they're unable to manage their resources, and the court appoints a guardian, which can be a family member. It could end up being a total stranger if it's a family that either there's no suitable candidate, or it could be a family that's in some kind of a disagreement. So in many instances, attorneys or banks or other fiduciaries are appointed. So you have a stranger coming into the process. So that tends to not be a result that you would plan for. And a power of attorney is a very simple, straightforward document in most cases, and is really just part of the toolbox that we talk about. I you know, and lawyers are all different. I'll tell you a secret. I mean, I don't charge per document. The time I spend with a client is the meeting time, the coming up with the plan. Documents, I've been doing this for 30 years. I have a forms library of, you know, I don't get out a quill pen and an inkwell and you know, write wills longhand like they used to. It you know, the time goes into the planning and making sure that everything fits together.
Well, when we come back from this next break, I want to talk a little bit more about that and the planning and the importance of it. And Eric certainly touched on a number of elements that could be really critical in your own estate planning. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in. And pledges can be done through WDIY.org. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on 88.1 WDIY.org. Pledges to our membership drive may be done through that website, WDIY.org. You can become a member, and if you're already a member, you can certainly pledge more to help us out and keep this station going and to continue to hear your financial choices. This evening, we're talking with attorney Eric Strauss from Worth, McGee, and Fisher, and we were talking about taking the fear out of estate planning. And part of that, as we mentioned earlier, was, you know, having a conversation with an attorney, someone who is used to hearing every possible story you can imagine. They're private. They keep it private. If there's issues you're afraid to talk to someone about, the attorneys understand that. If there's special needs, if there's drug abuse, if there's mental illness, there's, you know, substance abuse, they are used to hearing that, and they know how to help you navigate that. They take that fear out. But for some people, it really isn't as complicated as that. And as Eric mentioned, you know, the price you're paying for the attorney is for the planning, the conversation, what he's going to talk about. We mentioned earlier about tenancy by the entireties, which is, you know, tenancy with a spouse and it going automatically to a spouse. Occasionally, you might have joint accounts with your children or siblings. Are those accounts joint with rights of survivorship? It's a different kind of joint titling. There could be a joint tenants in common. And people could misunderstand that. So you really need to understand how you have accounts titled or how you think you may be on someone else's account. So the attorney could also talk to you about what other obligations or joint titling you might have and how that might impact your estate in the planning.
That's a great point on the joint titling, Lori. You know, there are two basic ways that two people can co-own, or multiple people can co-own property. One is joint tenants with right of survivorship, and, you know, that's sort of survivor takes all. Where there's a spouse, that, you know, the tenants by the entireties is sort of a subset of that. The other form, less common, but you see it, is what is called a tenancy in common. You mentioned it, but let's touch on that, because it's a critical distinction. Lori, if you and I own a building as joint tenants with right of survivorship, whoever dies first, the survivor owns the whole thing. We already covered that. If you and I own a building or a bank account as tenants in common, I own half and you own half. My will controls my half. Your will controls your half. So if, you know, we may be investors that we went in and we didn't set up a business entity. We just invested in an apartment building. We get along. We're friends. The thing works fine. One of us dies. And let's say my will gives everything to my brother, who you don't like. Now you're in business with my brother. And so when lawyers ask questions, you know, we want to see deeds, we want to see account statements, because often, you know, clients think they own their property a certain way, and it turns out they don't. They're surprised to learn that, you know, the tenancy in common happens all the time. So it's a critical distinction. The other thing is, when we talk about beneficiary designations, you know, sometimes these are forms that people filled out years ago. I met with an executive from a local, you know, one of the larger local companies, and he had a 401k plan through his employer that he filled out the beneficiary designation form over 20 years ago when he was a new hire. In the meantime, he listed his parents. He was unmarried at the time, had no children, and that form has sat there for years. In the meantime, he had done a will where he gave everything to his spouse and then provided for his children. But that form sat in the employer's, files for years. And it was only when we started to plan his estate that I said, well, you know, when's the last time you looked at that? And, you know, a marriage and two kids later, his parents were still listed as the beneficiary of that account. So, and even people who are sort of astute and, you know, again, he had done a will, everything was sort of up to date in his mind, but that form was just sitting there. So
I think that was the key word, in his mind, because I have seen the same thing. People have it in their mind. They don't go back and check, and it's the lawyer pushing, let's get it in writing. Let's see where it's printed. And, you know, I always tell people I'm not being snoopy. I'm interested, and there's a reason we're interested. So we're helping you navigate that. And I've seen the same case where someone has had children now, and they might still have their spouse as a primary beneficiary, and that's all good. But now if something happens to both of them and they're traveling and they don't have a contingent beneficiary, that could also blow up. It depends on if there's a default beneficiary and things like that. So that's why it's critical to kind of have this conversation. And it doesn't have to be scary, because someone's going to walk you through all of those common or potential pitfalls that could happen to kind of make sure they don't happen to you. So beneficiary designation, asset titling, it's all really important.
And Lori, if I can just mm-hmm. jump on your contingent beneficiary, mm-hmm. another excellent point. Let's just flesh that out a little bit. So on a standard beneficiary designation form, whether it's a retirement account, life insurance, annuity, I can name a primary beneficiary. And in my case, I've named my wife. I'm also enabled, I can list a contingent beneficiary. Some people fail to do that, and they don't realize what a terrible result that can lead to. And I'll give you, I've seen this happen. I represented the estate of a woman who died in a car accident that was her fault. She killed two other people. And she had her husband listed as the beneficiary of a 401 or of an IRA. She had two sons, but she had never gotten around to listing them as contingent beneficiaries. So upon her death, there were these massive claims against her estate. So the families of the individuals who were killed in the crash sued her. She had liability insurance, but not enough to cover the ultimate liability. The way these rules work, if she had named her sons as contingent beneficiaries of her IRA, that money would have gone to them free of any creditor's claim. Because she didn't have them named as contingent beneficiaries, the IRA custodian, their default provision under their plan was to pay the money into the estate. They figured, well, she probably had a will, and that's what, you know. The problem is, when assets get ported to an estate, they are subject to creditor's claims. Now, many people, ultimately, you know, if you have a couple of credit cards, it's not a big deal to have, you know, creditors having a claim against your estate. But in a catastrophic loss, in a situation like that, it's a terrible result.
Wow.
And it also accelerates the income taxation for something like an IRA.
Right.
We could probably do a whole other show on that. But
right.
But it's a bad result all around.
Yeah. So that's why it's very important to kind of take that inventory. So as we talked at the top of the show, kind of bringing this together so it's not so, scary going and doing your estate planning, is have an inventory of your assets. And that inventory will include the type of account it is, if it's a bank account, if it's an IRA, if it's a Roth IRA, what is the titling of the account. It's obvious on retirement accounts, but sometimes not so obvious on brokerage accounts or bank accounts. So you want to know how it's titled, and if you have beneficiary designations on them. What the attorney is going to do in talking to you and kind of understanding what your needs are, they're going to help make sure that whatever you're going to say in your will coordinates with what your assets are and how they're titled. And so just real quick before our middle break here, I just want to kind of raise an example, which would be if someone says, well, I'm giving my IRA to child A, and the IRA is $1 million, and I'm giving, everything else to child B through my will. Well, child A might have the IRA, their named beneficiary goes to them, and maybe there's nothing left in the estate. So someone might think they're doing a 50-50, like all to one asset to the one kid and, you know, everything in the estate to the other, and it might not really work out that way. So that's the importance of doing a will and kind of following the threads of how your asset titling or your beneficiary designations coordinate with what you're saying in your will. I've had too many people come in and say, you know, oh, my estate is, they think their estate is their will, and that's not exactly it. We want to thank Lori from Easton. Thank you, Lori, for your pledge during this hour. We really appreciate it. Folks, if you want to make a pledge or become a member at WDIY, go to wdiy.org and pledge online. It's very easy. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good afternoon, WDIY Allentown. I'm Shonda Gray. It is now 6:30 and 68, overcast skies. Tonight, we're going to have patchy fog, low 59. Thursday, it's going to be partly sunny, high 75. Thursday night, low 57. Friday, it's going to be sunny, high 70. Friday night, low 55. And for your Saturday, high 71. Saturday night, low 46. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking with attorney Eric Strauss from Worth, McGee, and Fisher, and we are talking about taking the fear out of estate planning and just kind of breaking down some of the considerations you need to take in your own estate planning and helping you kind of get closer to taking the step to making sure yours is done. Eric, if we could kind of go back to beneficiary designations for a minute. We talked about primary beneficiary designations, contingent beneficiary designations. People really should keep in mind a number of things besides just naming their beneficiary or their contingent. And if you could touch on that for a bit, and I'm talking about maybe minors or capacity, whether someone really could. And I know what happens a lot of times, like in the case I had earlier when I found that a couple, they were married, named each other as primary, but didn't name their now two children as contingent. I said, let's get that done. But I also said, you need to go talk to your attorney because I need to know if you have a will and if in that will there is a minor's provision and is there a provision if retirement accounts end up going to the minors. It's a lot of complications, probably too much for the show today, but could you just touch for a moment on why beneficiary designations really need to be reviewed beyond just knowing who it is?
Well, yeah, and I guess the way I'm going to answer that is to take a very common planning situation, a young couple with some young children, and maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but, you know, a common estate plan for a young couple is at the first death, everything goes to the surviving spouse, whether that's because they're a named beneficiary, joint owner, and then at the second death to the children in equal shares. But, you know, when you have an 8, 9, and 10-year-old, those folks are general. Well, in Pennsylvania, you have to be age 18 to inherit, or you have to have a guardian or a court. The court establishes what's called a restricted account. In your will, you have the freedom to override that. You can say, well, the share of any beneficiary under age 30 will be held in trust. You can have what's called a pot trust so that all the money is put in one trust for the common benefit of three or four children until the youngest reaches a certain age. And there's different reasons you would do that. But, you know, so that type of a trust would be what we call a testamentary trust. It lives inside of your will. It's not something you're setting up today. It's only, you're really leaving an empty bucket so that if your beneficiaries are young people, there's a safe place to put it so young people don't have access to money when they're not of a responsible age. You have either a bank or a trusted individual or a trust company serve as the gatekeeper, if you will. You know, that's the person with a checkbook in their hands. Money in trust can be available for, you know, the needs of the beneficiary. But if the beneficiary says, hey, I'd really like a $200,000 sports car, the answer probably is no, for a reason. But all that planning is done within the will, and many people think it stops at that point. But then I look at the IRA, and the beneficiary is the three kids.
Right.
8, 9, and 10 years old. So that's not a good result, because even though you've set that trust up under your will, there's no way to automatically port the retirement account money or the life insurance money into the trust. You have to update your beneficiary form to say something like, you know, if I have a spouse first and my children are the contingent beneficiaries, the beneficiary form will read something like, to my children in equal shares, provided they have reached age whatever. If they haven't, then pay it to the trust I've established under my last will and testament dated such and such a date, or just generally last will and testament. Different custodians have different ways to implement that. Some are very user-friendly. Some are a little more cumbersome, but critical step, because a lot of people's wealth, particularly younger couples, is in life insurance or it's in retirement accounts.
So it's very important to understand the beneficiary designation beyond just the name of who is on the account. And there can be a lot done with that. We have a caller on line two. We have Vicki in Nazareth. Hi,
Vicki.
Hi, can you hear us? Hi, Vicki.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, what's your question?
Now I can hear you on my phone, sorry. I know this is all about estate planning, but sort of the question is, when you have a house, particularly possessions that are owned joint tenant with right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
So you're explaining to us that nothing has been said about any of inheritance tax. So joint tenant with right of survivorship, a mother and a daughter.
Yeah.
The daughter would have to pay inheritance tax on half that house, though, right?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes. And here's the thing that surprises people. With a property that's owned joint tenants with right of survivorship, inheritance tax is payable by the surviving joint owner, period. So if let's say mother buys a house with mother's money, mother adds daughter's name to the deed, okay? And this could be a house, it could be a brokerage account, doesn't matter, bank account. If the parent who funded the asset dies first, the child or any joint owner pays inheritance tax at half the value. So, the surviving child is deemed to inherit that one half interest. But here's the catch. Let's say the child dies first, car accident, illness, something like that. That parent will pay inheritance tax on half the value of the property, even though it's theirs, even though they originally funded it. And that is a reason why you have to be very careful about naming joint owners of accounts. A lot of times banks recommend that. They used to call that the poor man's power of attorney. You know, oh, add your daughter's name to the account so she can help you pay your bills if you become ill. That's what we use powers of attorney for. I literally had a case where a 90-year-old woman had close to $700,000 in a brokerage account, investments. And her 65-year-old daughter, who had breast cancer for years, it wasn't any secret that the daughter had breast cancer. Ultimately, the daughter died of breast cancer. And shortly after the daughter's funeral, I had to explain to this poor 90-year-old woman that she was going to owe inheritance tax on half of approximately $700,000 brokerage account. And when we talk about, so here, this is an important point, because people have often several different advisors. There might be the attorney, the CPA, the financial planner. Those people need to be in touch with each other and work as a team, because in that case, the woman, you know, the will said what it should say. I mean, but the estate planning attorney, no one ever brought to that person's attention, nor did that attorney ask how that underlying brokerage account was titled.
Right.
Okay, Vicki, so that could make a difference, and it could also make a difference on other taxation if you're a joint owner and you don't live in the house. So if something were to happen, you've now inherited it, you owned half of it, and now you want to sell it, and it was never your principal residence, if you go to sell it, there could be some income tax consequences to it for you. So it's even beyond the inheritance tax. So, we like people to kind of think through everything they do before they do it. And there's reasons, so I'm not judging the reasons that it was made joint, but you just want to make sure that you understand the consequences of it and put yourself in a good position. So,
joint ownership with right of survivorship is a form of Russian roulette. You know, if the senior generation dies first, that younger generation saves half whatever the inheritance tax would be. But at the risk of, if the younger generation typically it's the younger generation dies first, you know, very few people like the idea of paying inheritance tax on their own money.
Okay, Vicki. So, all right.
Thank you
for calling in. We appreciate the question. Have a good evening. Okay, so, Eric, that kind of falls right in line with what we were talking about in taking an inventory of your assets and the titling and the beneficiary designation. It's all important in understanding contingent beneficiaries. And to Eric's, further point, make sure that if you're doing planning with your financial advisor or your CPA, you better make sure your attorney's in the loop as well, because there was a case I heard about at one of the estate planning council meetings where I think the insurance agent was doing some life insurance planning and the estate attorney was, working with them for the, life insurance planning. And I think no one bought the life insurance policy, something like that. It was some crazy story because the one thought the other was doing it. So it really is important to make sure that you're coordinating your planning. So Eric, can you tell me what the process is if someone were to come into your office? What does that look like or feel like?
So I start with a questionnaire that it asks.
Do you give that before they come in?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. That gets sent out either electronically or by regular mail. It's a fill-in-the-blanks form. So it asks basic information, date of birth, last 4 digits of Social Security. If it's a marriage, is it the first marriage, second marriage, third marriage? Who the intended beneficiaries are. So if there's children, usually they're the intended beneficiaries. I like to have their, some basic information about them. We go on then asset by asset. Before that, pets. Some people have pets issues that are of a concern. They want to address that in their estate plan, which you can. I ask about unique assets, things that people don't usually think of as assets, but, art, antiques, collectibles, things of value. I had an estate several years ago where a woman almost threw away her father's $600,000 comic book collection, because the daughter thought it was just a bunch of junky old stuff in the basement. And I said, we better have someone come and look at this stuff. And $600,000 later, and the reason I ask about things like that is because some collectors, their children or other intended beneficiaries don't share their love of whatever they collect. So, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. and then we go asset by asset, vehicles and brokerage accounts, retirement accounts. So that's something that people fill out ahead of time. I always ask if people have particular burial wishes, who their intended fiduciaries are. So, that would be their intended executor or trustee or agent under power of attorney. Because it that questionnaire forces people to think about the kinds of things we're going to be talking about. And I think sometimes people are maybe put off by the questionnaire, like, oh my gosh, this is so much stuff to get together. Some lawyers don't use a questionnaire. And I tell people, do as best you can. If there's things we need to follow up that I think are important, I will tell you what to follow up with. But, to get the process started, you need some start point.
Well, frankly, I think it makes your job more efficient, and you can be, really concentrate on the more critical matters if they've kind of taken those steps. It's
exactly.
Not a waste of your time. If I'm going to pay an attorney, I want to make sure they're telling me not to go, look at which accounts I have. I want you to tell me, you shouldn't name a minor on your account, or do we have that provision in the will for a minor's trust? And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And after that, once they come up with a questionnaire, the preparedness and the well, really the preparedness of the client guides what happens next. Some clients, probably all of your listeners, lawyer, Lori, you know, would come in and, oh, we've done our homework, we've read this, we listened to your financial choices.
I have really good listeners.
And we have this all set up, here's what we want to do. And sometimes I say, that sounds great, this is going to be easy. Sometimes I say, well, that's all good, have you thought about this, these three or four things? Some people come in completely unprepared, through no fault of their own. They're not, you know, they've done some reading or they're just, you know, they may have had a recent medical diagnosis. They were really not thinking about doing this at all, but all of a sudden it's thrust upon them. So, you know, clients like that may need a little more hand-holding. For a client that's very well prepared, usually in the first meeting, which nowadays we're doing mostly by phone or Zoom, I'm trying to, you know, restrict human traffic in our office. But, you know, that first meeting, which can be lengthy, that first meeting can be an hour or two, you know, a client is very well prepared. By the end of that meeting, we may have a pretty good thumbnail sketch of what the estate plan is going to look like, whether, you know, we're going to use a will or a revocable trust, powers of attorney. We can kind of fill in those blanks, sometimes with a couple follow-up items that either I need to look into or a client needs to look into. Some people, that first meeting is really just about education and just going over some basic concepts that then people can leave that meeting really with a firm sense of what they need to think about. And I'm... You know, when you do this for a while, you get pretty good at gauging people and how prepared they are and what they need to follow up on. So after that, you know, at some point in the process, we come up with a plan. We draft documents. We send those documents out to a client to review, again, either electronically or regular mail. And the client reads through them. If we need a follow-up meeting, whether that's by phone or an in-person meeting to go over concepts, that's always fine. Many people, they read their first draft and they say, that looks great, and they come in. We do have people come in live to the office to sign. My conference rooms look like ORs now. We have plexiglass screens and tables and disinfectant and thermometers and all that. So, you know, that second meeting or the signing meeting is usually brief, and particularly now, you know, I'm trying to limit those to maybe 15 minutes.
Eric, I'm going to stop you here. We're going to take our last break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are in our membership drive right now. If you would like to become a member or contribute a little extra money to the show, or to the station, I apologize, not to the show, to the station, WDIY, you can do that online at wdiy.org. If you have questions this evening for us, for Eric or myself, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And Eric, while, you know, we're not done with the show yet, but if someone wanted to call your office, what is the number?
Our office phone number is 610-437-4896. I have an office on Walbert Avenue in Allentown. We also have a satellite office on Interchange Road in Lehighton, Pennsylvania.
Okay, so 610-437-4896. 4896. Okay, thanks, and we can review that at the end of the show as well. And your website is...
WorthLawOffices.com.
WorthLawOffices.com.
Yes.
Okay, if people want to get more information. So, Eric, let's, with the rest of our time, let's talk, if you could just give me a punch list of the documents. So you've mentioned throughout our conversations tonight the will, you've mentioned power of attorney, you've mentioned health directives, you've mentioned trust. So let's just give a quick punch list on that. And then I really would like to take a little bit of time talking about digital assets, because this is something that impacts everybody and you really need to get ahead of this. So if you could just give us a punch list of the estate docs.
So yeah, the estate docs, I mean, for most people, a will, which is, most people know what a will is. It's a document that disposes of wealth, names beneficiaries, names an executor who oversees the process, would name trustees of if you need a trust for a particular beneficiary or group of beneficiaries, you know, you're naming those fiduciaries. And I'm sure you've done, I know you've done programs on will, so I don't want to, and then, you know, powers of attorney for healthcare. So if, you know, people want to plan for their disability and can name other individuals who would make healthcare decisions or financial decisions, those, we call those agents. Living will, that's the, you know, the pull the plug document. If, you know, you can, you know, have a separate document, which most people are aware of, that says essentially if you're in a permanently unconscious, can't express your wishes, you're terminally ill, and the only thing they can do is prolong the process of actively dying, a living will authorizes the withdrawal of medical care. It is not a euthanasia document. It's the withdrawal of care other than measures to keep you comfortable. Some people want to use what's called a revocable trust, or some people call them living trusts, in as a substitute for a will. In some states, those are extremely important. States like Florida, California, mm-hmm. New York, that have a very cumbersome probate system. Here in Pennsylvania, we have a pretty straightforward probate system. Lately, we've actually been probating wills on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty, you know, the court system in Pennsylvania doesn't heavily supervise estates. You know, an executor gets appointed. These Zoom conferences that we're using to probate wills now last anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes. It's sort of underwhelming to people. They hear all this stuff about probate, and they think, oh, that was it. So those are the basic documents. And you know, depending on the complexity of an estate plan, I mean, I don't want to make this sound like it's always simple. For many people, it is. For many people, it's a surprisingly user-friendly process, you know, getting your documents in order. Some people, it's a little more involved. You know, blended families, small business owners.
Federal estates.
Federal estate tax, yeah. I mean, currently, you know, and with the shifting target of the federal estate tax exemption, you know, that's something that often requires more thought. We sometimes talk about gifting, when to gift, what types of assets to gift. So you know, any particular client, the process can get a little more sophisticated. This hour with you always goes so fast. I do want to talk a little bit about digital assets. I was very fortunate to be the chair of the Pennsylvania Bar Association. Has a real property probate and trust law section. It's like a committee. But I was the chair of that when digital assets legislation was introduced in Pennsylvania. And what that group does is it reviews legislation, proposed legislation, and comments. So I was very involved in the development of Pennsylvania's digital assets bill, which is based on a uniform act known as the Revised Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Act. It's a mouthful. Here's the thing, and we could do a whole hour on digital assets. In the old days, which was not too long ago, you know, a person would die and the executor goes to the house and there's this breadcrumb trail. There's a file cabinet or a folder or a tote bin. Even if it was messy, there was physical paper. Nowadays, and you see it in your industry, you know, mm-hmm. everyone's going paperless, either by choice or because account providers are sort of, hey, why don't you go paperless? You know, go green. So more often than not, and it's going to happen more and more in the future, a person dies and the executor comes upon a laptop and they don't know how to log into it. Now, I tell people, you know, you could have $20 million in an online brokerage account and there isn't one scrap of paper in the house. You know, they don't. You know, you don't get a paper statement in the mail. You get a monthly email with a link to a statement. Mm-hmm. Online accounts don't typically send a paper 1099 for tax reporting purposes. They send a link to a 1099. If a person does their tax return on TurboTax and doesn't print a copy, and listen, folks, there's no magic computer database that a probate attorney or anyone else has access to that you can just punch a name and a social security number and everything pops up on a screen. There was a case involving... So digital assets aren't just things like digital currency, things like Bitcoin, okay? That's a digital asset. Digital assets can be the login credentials. They can be the photographs that you have stored in Photoshop, okay, or Shutterfly. So what we don't really think of as that, I mean, who prints pictures anymore?
Right.
Right? Don't think that your executor is automatically going to get access to the pictures you have on your computer if they're stored online, okay? So people have to start thinking about, number one, inventorying their digital assets and preserving that inventory in a form that's accessible to your executor. Because guess what? If it's just stored on another virtual file, which many people do, they have a, you know, they in their computer, they have a virtual file with all their passwords. It, you know, you're at step two and you're not helping your executor get through step one. So that's something that's very important nowadays. And you know, again, we could do a whole other show just on digital assets. But the key distinction is between the content of a communication, that would be the body of an email, and the other digital assets, which would be, you know, when I open my Microsoft Outlook, I see date, time, sender, recipient. If I'm an executor or a power of attorney, I probably don't really need to read someone's emails, but I want to know who's sending them emails. Because if there's a monthly email from Charles Schwab, it's not because Charles Schwab likes that person. It's because there's an account there and they're sending a link.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the way the digital assets hierarchy is, some online account providers have what they call an online tool, where I, with a particular account, when I set up my user account, can say what happens to the content. Can my executor get it? Can anyone get it? You know, people do all kinds of things online, and some of it is very private to some people. So you can restrict access to certain things. You may want to grant your executor or your agent or power of attorney broad access, limited access. It's something that we really need to think about.
I've never noticed that, Eric. You're saying there are certain applications online that might grant you, when you're setting up an account, to establish that you would allow your executor to see it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Under the statute, which takes effect in mid-January, you see the term, quote, online tool, which would be something that, and very few account providers have that now, but it's going to become the industry standard because it's going to make it easier for companies like Yahoo, Google, Amazon to know whether the user of that particular account allowed fiduciary access. The default would then be something if a person has a power of attorney or a will that specifically references digital asset powers, then that would be the second place to look. After that, you look at the term of service agreement, and then you look at the default provisions under the law, which the default provisions under the law grant, and there's different provisions for power of attorney versus executor versus trustee.
And the
versus
power of
guardian.
Attorney dies with the person, by the way, folks.
Correct. Good
A lot
point.
Of people think the power of attorney is still good after the person's died.
Right.
So,
and you know, the other thing is, a lot of people do an end around and they impersonate the deceased user. That's actually a crime. It happens all the time. I'm not condoning it, but it, you know, it's better to have it addressed in your documents so it's clear, you know, what you intend. People don't think of online photographs as a digital asset. They are.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Artists, composers, you know, can have things of great value. Mm-hmm. Digital, filmmakers. There's all kinds of assets that have, you know, great economic value that live inside a computer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that really everyone needs to be thinking about because it's for many people, thinking about it long overdue.
And so they might also, as you said, they could have it saved on their computer. So, you know, instead they put it on a thumb drive and then they forget that they've updated their passwords, you know, because passwords change on different accounts at different times. So really there could be a case to be made to keep something on paper and then make sure that your executor knows where it is, if it's hidden in some particular spot, if you have a safe in the house or that type of thing. And fewer people have safe deposit boxes anymore.
Correct.
Either, and those are hard to get into. So, you know, if you've trusted someone enough to name them as your executor, it might be a good idea to trust them enough to tell them where you're keeping some of that information, or maybe even, I couldn't even say keep it at the attorney's office, though, Eric, because it probably changes often enough with the digital assets. But they could tell the attorney where they're keeping it, couldn't they? That would be something.
All or none of the above.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very particularly with clients who may be single, no children, no people that they really would trust with that information, I do offer to, you know, give me copies. I'm happy to use my file for whatever a client wants to use my file for. It's confidential. Any sensitive information we don't digitize. It's in paper form in a very secure place. You know, the point is that someone knows that.
Okay. All good information. So great information tonight, Eric. I really appreciate it. So if people have questions for you or want to learn more about estate planning and your services, your phone number is?
610-437-4896, or you can go to our website, worthlawoffices.com.
Worthlawoffices.com. Eric, thank you so much for coming in. Folks, Eric and I get very excited about talking about this, and we could have probably talked for another, you know, 20 hours.
A lot we didn't cover.
But we hope that we took some of the fear out of estate planning and, you know, have prompted some of you to think about it, to move forward, to get things in order. I always say if you plan, nothing happens. It's for those poor people who haven't planned. So be one of those people who plans, and it doesn't have to be as scary as you might think. So thank you again to Eric Strauss, Attorney Eric Strauss from Worth, McGee, and Fisher. We thank you so much. Listeners, we thank you so much. You still can pledge through WDIY.org. Next week, folks, I may be out of town, so I may have a pre-recorded show. If not, you will hear about special circumstances in financial planning. And if I don't do it next week, I'll do that the next. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Thank you, Lori, for being here. Thank you, Shandi, for being here as well. Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.